Today's episode of Expanded Perspectives is sponsored by Gaia.com. Help find your own truth by exploring perspectives you won't find in the mainstream on some of life's biggest mysteries. Whether it's grand conspiracies, breakaway societies, UFOs, ancient civilizations, lost wisdom, as well as the paranormal, all at your fingertips. Stream videos anywhere from your living room or on the go with access to over 7,000 titles, all available to you with a monthly plan for only $9.95 a month. If you sign up now, the first month is only 99 cents. And there are multiple plans to choose from, including a three-month plan and an annual plan. If you enjoy expanding your perspective, then you'll enjoy Gaia.com. 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 And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives. It's me, Cam, 1 year older, and sitting across the table from me is my good friend that shared more than three cold drinks with me this weekend for my birthday. Mi amigo Filio Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? I'm super excited to be here, especially with the new and improved Cameron Hale.
Right?
You're older, way more mature. And way more wisdom.
Yeah, I don't know about all that. That didn't show so much over the weekend. We had a great time.
Yeah.
I want to thank each and every one of y'all, too, for all the emails, all the messages, all the Facebook notifications, everything for wishing me a happy birthday. It really means a lot. Thank y'all so very, very much.
Now, who knew you were so well liked?
Yeah.
That's
because they don't really know me. That's the problem. Right.
They're in love with the radio persona,
not the
real Cam Hale.
That's right. Yeah. That's 100% right.
That is true. I never thought about it in those terms.
For those of you that follow us on Instagram and whatnot, and even on Facebook, maybe you've seen that I got a pair of Crocs for my birthday, early birthday present. I got a pair of camouflage Crocs. That's right. They're ugly as all get out. I love them. But then they surprised me. Have you ever seen what Sanooks are, Kyle?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm wearing them. There's these slip-on shoes. I don't even know how, like, they're made out of canvas, and I'm supposed to have some kind of, like, a yoga mat or something. I don't know, but they're comfortable. My son had a pair years ago, and I tried them on. I loved them. And I've been, yeah, check them out. Yeah, see?
Oh, I've seen those. Yeah. I didn't know the name.
Yeah, so my wife and my daughter got me some of those, and then my son got me a fish finder for my yak. So I'm good to go. Now I can tell whenever the sea creatures from below are going to come up and attack me, and I'll be wearing my lightweight shoes and all that stuff. But anyway, we had a great time. We went and ate. We went and drank, smoked a few cigars, hung out with some good friends, had a great weekend. We hope each and every one of y'all, especially here in the States, wherever you celebrated Thanksgiving, hope everybody got their belly full, didn't eat too much, hope everybody stayed safe. Let's first and foremost put that out there. Everybody else, hope you had a wonderful weekend. Hope the weather was great. You got to get out and have some fun. We're going to start this week off with some fun. Not just that, historical fun. Philly, I got something here you're going to enjoy.
Please, drop some knowledge.
In Egypt, they unearthed a 7,000-year-old lost city.
Really?
It had huts, tools, and 15 huge graves dating from the first dynasty in the Sohag province. Yeah, that's right, folks. A cemetery dating back to its first dynasty in the southern province of Sohag. And the antiquities minister has said this, that Egypt has unearthed
more than 7,000-year-old city and cemetery. Now, it says that the first could be a boon, of course, for Egypt's ailing tourism industry. Apparently, it has suffered a lot of setbacks, of course, you know, and because of some of the war and some of the things going on around there, but no big deal, nothing to worry about. But the city is likely to have housed, they believe this, what they had found, high-ranking officials and grave builders. Now, it's wild you'd put them together, but its discovery, says, may yield new insights into Abydos, which is one of the oldest cities in ancient Egypt. Experts say that Abydos was Egypt's capital towards the end of the pre-dynastic period and during the rule of the first four dynasties. Now, the discovery was made 400 meters away from the Temple of Seti I, a New Kingdom period memorial across the Nile from present-day Luxor. It's only 400 meters out. They were like, wait a minute, what have we found here? And they said so far they've uncovered some iron tools, some pottery shards, some uncovered, you know, these huts, and then 15 graves, huge graves. Now, this is what it says here. Now, this fella says, this is the Egyptian ministry guy here, says that the size of the graves discovered in the cemetery is larger in some instances than royal graves in Abydos dating back to the first dynasty, which proves the importance of the people buried there and their high social standing during this early era of ancient Egyptian history.
Wow.
Right? So they have found something that they really can't pin down just yet. So they're going to be really going through. And like we've much said, as everything progresses, as medicine progresses and everything progresses along in technology, so do the fine tooth fact gathering of archaeology. So these guys, you know, they're going to go in there and they're going to take their time and nail this down proper. It's not just going to be a rush through. Oh, it belongs over here. Oh, it belongs over there. This is something that they really want to look at because they don't understand why the grave sizes are so big, this whole thing. And the fact that it was right there this whole time.
That is
pretty cool, isn't
that
it?
That is very cool. Cam, you know, it's this time of year. It's one of our favorite times of year. Have you been thinking and looking into ways to pay for your Christmas bills and all the gifts and stuff you got to get?
Oh,
have you been looking into that?
I've been selling blow and handguns and smuggling people across the border. Yeah, for sure.
Everybody knows that money sometimes gets very tight around this time of year with all the gift buying and things like that. Well, I have a way that someone, even you, Cam, may potentially earn some extra income that you can use for your Christmas bills.
Okay.
Cam, also, can I ask you, have you ever contemplated a way to go for long periods of time without going to the bathroom?
Like going number one or number two?
Both. Either one.
No, man, I've never really thought of that. Like, you're talking like crossing your legs and don't pop the seal, don't break the seal type stuff. Like, no, where are you going with this? What are you talking about?
What I'm talking about is NASA has come up with this, get this, the Space Poop Challenge.
Wait. What?
The Space Poop Challenge. You heard me right. The U.S. National Aeronautics and Space Administration seeks proposed solutions for fecal, urine, and menstrual management systems to be used in the crew's launch and entry suits over the continuous duration, they say, of at least 144 hours. An in-suit waste management system would be beneficial for contingency scenarios for any long-duration task. Yeah, you heard me right. Astronauts have been going around in space for over 50 years, and NASA has not been able to come up with anything better than just an adult diaper, basically. And so they're reaching out to the public to ask for help, to see if anybody can come up with a better way. It says this challenge offers up to $30,000 American in prizes to innovative solutions for long-duration waste management in a microgravity environment. NASA will award up to three prizes for the three best ideas. So that's pretty cool. Now, the contest is being managed for NASA by a website called HeroX, which is basically a website hosting incentive-based competitions site. And it contains details on the spacesuit. And you can get involved. It says on there, in the event of cabin depressurization or other contingencies, crew members may need to take refuge in their launch and entry suits for long durations of at least 144 hours straight. The crew members will have less than 60 minutes to get into and seal their spacesuit to ensure the crew's members' safety. The solution or this proposed system needs to take no more than 5 minutes to set up and integrate with the space suit. The Space Poop Challenge is open for submissions until December 20th, and the winners will be announced on January 31st, 2017. So if you're a type of guy that comes up with good inventions, or gal, it doesn't matter, and you have something that's better than an adult diaper, Man, maybe you should submit it to NASA. You might get some money.
I can't believe that's a thing. They're just exhausted. They're throwing their hands up like, we got no more ideas. We got no more nothing.
I guess
we
they don't have time to look to into that. Right. And here's just the thing. If you come up with a solution that works for them, if it'll work for them, you could use it for other things. Road trips, concerts, any places you got to go.
Right.
Where you got to be stuck in a long area. I mean, if you can survive for 144 hours without ever having to use the bathroom, and you'll never miss, you'll never get up in the middle of a concert again. Or a protest or something like that. Yeah.
That's horrible. But, I mean, still, hey.
The space poop challenge, folks.
The space poop challenge. Well, I got something that might help with the space poop challenge, as you brought that up. For all of those that don't speak English whenever you're talking about this, maybe this will help you, folks. This is from The Verge. Panasonic has came out with something that's very, very interesting. They've got a megaphone that automatically translates commands into multiple languages.
Wow.
Yeah, and I get a load of this. There's a business there. They said they're finding the need there in Japan to deal with increasing number of foreign visitors. So Panasonic thinks it's got the answer. They have a megaphone that translates the user's voice into multiple languages. Now, they call it the Mega Hanyaku. Says it's a reasonably good pun on the Japanese words for megaphone and translation. Now, for all those that speak, of course, Japanese, I'm sure I didn't pronounce that right. And I'm sure I'll get inundated with emails because y'all love to do that. Y'all love to tell me how I don't pronounce things properly. And I'm okay with it because I got a delete button. So listen, it says this. It listens for Japan's input and then plays the phrases back in English, Chinese, and Korean. So I'm picturing a speaking spell, like you speak into Japanese, and then you hit it, and it just plays it back in those three languages.
That's pretty cool, though.
It is.
You know?
Yeah. Now, this is one. It says it isn't quite the portable babblefish of your dreams, is what it says. Panasonic has only loaded it with around 300 set phrases. It says, though it can connect to the internet to get more. Also, it has a touchscreen, which you might think would let you just bypass the whole speaking thing in the first place, but hey. Says it's required. It requires a contact of less than $183 a month is what it is. So a contract that you get to do with it. So Panasonic says they're looking to secure about 10,000 of these customers for these megaphones. Now, I understand what they're saying. It is like a speaking spell. You could literally punch in what you want to say in Japanese and hit it, and then it would say it in another language. So it's really not like you're talking through it, and it's sitting there spitting out another language
or
something like that.
It records your comments.
It
then
picks up on what you're saying, like Siri does.
Translates it, right.
And then translates it. So it's not quite as crazy as it sounds, but hey, look, we're getting there. We're getting there.
Yeah, that's cool. That's why I always say, why can't we all just decide on one language and just the whole planet speak one language?
Right.
It'd be so much easier.
Well, because you and I are very dim, so there's no way we could learn. What other language are you going to learn? I mean, honestly, come on.
Spanish?
No, you couldn't learn Spanish. There's no way. You couldn't even learn sign language. So, I mean, come on, man.
I could learn Spanish probably easier than all the other ones. Chinese?
Yeah.
Japanese? Mandarin? Korean? Forget that.
You know what I could learn? Australian. I could learn Australian. Pretty sure I could learn that. Canadian. I could learn Canadian. I'm pretty sure I could.
Yeah, don't you just throw A in after everything?
A boot.
Yeah, a boot. Offense.
Yeah.
Don't forget about offense.
I can learn. Guys, I'm there. Look, I can already speak. I speak English, Australian, and Canadian. I don't speak them fluently. You know, I don't know all the slang, but I'm doing pretty good.
Oh, moving on. Everybody seems to like stories about Dog Man. And I recently saw a new story because I read one on the Elite Show not too long ago. I saw a new one that was just posted on Phantoms and Monsters. And it's from a woman named Victoria D. And she wrote about her encounter she had with a strange looking creature. And guess where? Canuck Chase. It seems like there's always a lot of odd sightings around that area. And this happened back in 1995 or 1996. And she said, I was driving back to Sheffield from Wales on the A5 through Canuck Chase. The road was empty, as it was around 2 a.m. I was driving with my boyfriend in the passenger seat and two friends in the back. There were no street lights that I can remember. The road was quite straight on this stretch, and I had my lights on high beam. I noticed about 400 yards in front of me a large animal crossing the road. I called out to the others in the car to look, and we all did. The animal stopped in the middle of the road and looked towards the car, apparently unperturbed by my car and headlights coming directly towards it. What made all of us shocked was its eyes were red in the headlights, and you could see its outline, and it was not a badger or a deer or anything that we could recognize. The way it continued walking on all fours across the road slowly, it continued into the bushes at the side of the road as we were virtually level with it, and we all caught a glimpse of the red eyes. We all just gasped and said, "What the hell is that?" I didn't want to find out, and I put my foot on the gas and we got the hell out of there. We discussed it on the way home, but later forgot about the incident. We have all parted company since then, but I have never forgot about it. I've never told anyone else about this. So that's an interesting sighting.
Yeah, very.
A large, you know, like werewolf thing seen crossing the road. Now, I will say I've read several other accounts of similar typed creatures being seen in that Canuck Chase area of the UK. And I don't know if the eyes were glowing red or just the eye shine happened to look like a hue of red, you know, because I've seen that with certain animals and stuff. But very interesting story.
It is. Look, man, I don't know anything about them like we always talk about, but I love the idea of these stories. So, and why is it always something that is dog-shaped and red-eyed in all of these tales?
I don't know.
All of these old tales. It's ominous, but it's very strange that that's what it fits. It's just funny to me that that's how it falls together. I don't know. It's odd.
Yeah, I always seem to love the Dogman stories. But moving on, let's take a break, folks. And after the break, I'm going to be getting into some lesser-known alien abductions. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. We explore many things on this show. That's what keeps you coming back week after week. Whether it's some ancient monolithic site, far older than mainstream media wants to accept, strange sightings of UFOs, run-ins with the unthinkable, like creatures like Dogman or the Flatwoods Monster. Perhaps the most terrifying to me is the story of alien abductions. Nothing to me can be more scary than some otherworldly entity coming into your bedroom at night, uninvited, and escorting you through your window or wall, up into the night sky, eventually into a spacecraft where they spend a few hours doing God knows what, then returning you to your bed and erasing any memory of what just occurred. We've spoken to several people on this show about their abductions, and countless more off air, and there definitely seems to be something going on. Now, most of you are familiar with the Travis Walton abduction or the Betty and Barney Hill case, but today, I'm going to be exploring some lesser known cases. So with that, let's begin. This first case takes place just outside Alamogordo, New Mexico, on August 13, 1975. Charles L. Moody was in the desert observing a meteor shower at around 1:15 a.m. when he saw something strange. Something that caught his attention. It appeared to be glowing, a metallic disc-shaped object falling towards the ground around 300 feet away. The object was about 50 feet long and about 20 feet wide. As it descended to an altitude of 15 to 20 feet, he just watched it. He stated that it wobbled on its own axis. Then, it began moving slowly and steadily towards Moody. At this point, he became scared and he decided to get the hell out of there. He jumped into his car, but it wouldn't start. The object came to a stop about 70 feet away. Moody could hear a high-pitched humming sound.
He noticed a rectangular window in the craft through which he could see shadows. These shadows resembled human forms. The noise stopped, and he felt a numbness crawling all over his body. The hair on his arm began to stand, and the next thing he would remember was seeing the object rising up into the sky and disappearing into the distance. Moody turned the ignition key and his car started immediately. Terrified, he drove off quickly. When he arrived home, he noticed to his surprise that the time was now 3 a.m. He felt that he had somehow lost 1.5 hours, give or take. The following day, Moody experienced a pain in his lower back. Within a few days, a rash broke out all over his lower body. He decided to go to his doctor to get checked out. Upon the recommendation of his physician, he began to practice self-hypnosis in an effort to try and recall what had occurred during the lost time period. Over the next few weeks, he was able to piece together an almost complete picture of the events. According to Moody's own recollection, after being overcome by numbness on October 13, 1975, he had observed two odd-looking beings approaching his car. About 6 foot tall, the creatures wore skin-tight black clothing, and after a brief scuffle with them, he was rendered unconscious. He awoke on a slab inside of the craft. His limbs felt leaden and immovable. Next to him stood what appeared to be the alien leader. The latter was distinguishable from Moody's captors by his short stature of around 5 foot and the silvery white color of his suit. However, like the others, he had a large, hairless head, a protruding brow, roundish eyes, small ears and nose, and very thin lips. His skin was whitish-gray. The leader asked Moody telepathically if he was prepared to behave peacefully. When Moody agreed to do so, the leader applied a rod-like device to his back, which instantly relieved the paralysis. Moody was taken to another part of the ship where he was shown the drive unit, a device consisting of a large rod surrounded by 3 glass canopied holes. Each hole contained a central crystalline object with one rod on each side of it. One rod had a spherical head, while the other was topped by a T-shaped bar. As he moved about the craft, Moody noticed a sweet, stifling odor. He was told that the alien mothership was situated miles away above Earth. He was promised a future meeting with the occupants, but warned that closer contact with Earthmen would not be attempted for another 20 years. The aliens told Moody that he would have no recollection of the incident until about 2 weeks later. The leader placed his hands on the sides of Moody's head, rendering him unconscious once more. An analysis of Moody's claims by Charles McQuinston, co-inventor of the Psychological Stress Evaluation Clinic, indicated that he was telling the truth. However, UFO investigator Jim Lorenzen questions a couple of contradictions in Moody's accounts of the incident. In an early telling, Moody related that the alien mothership was located 400 miles above Earth. Later, however, he said it was located 6,000 miles away. Another point which Lorenzen notes is that Moody at one time referred to his two captors as frail creatures, yet later described them as being 6 feet tall. Despite these differences in the actual distance the mothership was from the Earth or the exact size of his captors, most believe Moody is telling the truth, and something truly bizarre happened to him late one night in New Mexico. The next alien abduction case took place back in 1959 and again in 1967 near North Platte, Nebraska. In 1989, at a UFO and UFO abduction conference in Laramie, Wyoming, a woman reported that she had been abducted by a UFO from their farm when she was a young woman.
The woman, Joyce Updike, said the abduction occurred after a UFO landed in her family's farmyard in 1959 and again in 1967, but that she had no memory of it until she went under regressive hypnosis. Updike told the audience that Dr. Leo Sprinkle of New Mexico hypnotized her, and that's when she remembered the abductions. She said that for years, all she remembered was light filling the house and the farmyard. She said she locked the house and decided to go to bed. She said she awoke during the night with all of her clothes on and on top of the bed covers in the heat of August. This was a dead giveaway that something strange had happened to her. She said she wondered about that night until her hypnosis, when she learned she had actually been abducted by aliens. She claimed the hypnosis revealed the 1967 abduction, but that turned out to be her second one. The first, back in 1959, didn't even remember that. Back in 1959, when she drove her little red Rambler station wagon to one of their pastures, she said it was there she met two space people. She said she was embarrassed because she was barefooted, and in 1959, women were not supposed to leave their houses dressed like that. She also said she was wearing an apron, which was another no-no. Joyce said the encounters changed her profoundly, and she realized people thought she started acting a little goofy, but never understood why until after the hypnosis. She recounted that the space people were very peaceful. She said they wore spacesuits, kind of like an outfit. They had thick-soled shoes, and one of the men held two metal rods that he was aimed at her, while the other climbed over a nearby wire fence and walked to the landed object, partially hidden by a hill. I feel like I have to mention here the similarities between the two stories, where in both instances, the capturers possessed some sort of strange rod that seems to be able to paralyze or unparalyze its victims at will. Updike said she then found herself inside the object, on top of an examining table. Two men of average height and well-built stood next to her. Another man, wearing a three-piece loose-fitting surgical outfit with a hood and a smoke-colored visor over the eyes, stood by a circular glass-covered instrument panel, and he also wore gauntlet-like gloves with pointed pincher-type clamps. This man approached her, raised her right arm by the elbow, and at this point, all consciousness recalled ended. Updike said that she learned that under any circumstances, she could no longer trust time and that the space people had a plan. It seems that sightings of unidentified objects in Nebraska go back a long way. The earliest reports of UFOs over Nebraska occurred all the way back in 1897. Newspaper reports from that period chronicled a series of sightings in Nebraska, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Illinois. The first sighting started on the night of April 5, 1897 in Omaha, with more than 100 people witnessing the appearance of a flying object approximately 12 foot long, spherical in shape, shiny, with a steel-like body. The term UFO had not even been coined at this time. The reports said the object became so luminous that the brightness awakened people from their sleep as the light flooded through their bedroom windows. Many of the witnesses went into a panic. Several nights later in Sioux City, Iowa, another craft, cigar-shaped, attracted more attention from people there. Similar sightings that night were reported in Cedar Rapids and Burlington, Iowa. The mysterious object was reported to be elongated, with a glaring headlight of some kind and a shiny steel hull, gliding along with a slight hissing sound. A couple of nights later, on April 10th, a Chicago newsstand dealer, Walter McCann, took a picture of one with his camera at Rogers Park. The pictures revealed an elongated, ovoid shape. The same day, in Mount Carroll, Illinois, more witnesses reported seeing the same type of object again, describing it as an elongated and ovoid-shaped. That night, a slender object with rotating red and green lights on both sides appeared over Chicago, where hundreds could see it, and did, from downtown Chicago, loop Evanston and Lakeshore. Later, 100 more were seen in Quincy, Illinois, a slender cigar-shaped craft, describing this one with a bright white light on the front and red and green lights on both sides with a shiny aluminum-like surface. After hovering in the area at around 500 feet, it left at a tremendous speed. This next story comes from north of the border, up in the Yukon Territory of Canada. Canada, too, is no stranger to strange UFO sightings, mystery sounds, and yes, alien abductions. I recently covered some bizarre pinging sounds coming from under the ocean in northern Canada, as well as a recent near miss with a Canadian airliner and some unknown UFO over Lake Ontario back on November 14th of this year. The person who relayed this story wants to remain anonymous for fear of ridicule, so the story is simply known as the Canal Road Abduction. I left Ross River and headed up the North Canal Road by myself on my motorbike. I was going to go hunting for moose. I was planning on spending 3 days in the area between Sheldon Lake and McPass. A guy I worked with and a friend of his were to leave a day later, and I was to meet with them for some fishing. We were all to stay at a trailer at Dewhurst Creek. I left Ross River early in the morning, and the temperature started to drop. Then it started to rain very hard and got very cold. When I got to Gravel Creek, I stopped at Art John's cabin and put on some extra clothes while standing under the edge of his roof. I knew the rain would not stop, so I got back on my bike and headed off. I arrived at our trailer a half hour before dark, very cold and very tired. I lit up a fire, cooked supper, and went straight to bed looking forward to the morning hunt. Overnight, the rain had stopped. At daybreak, I put my gear and my gun on my bike and headed toward McPass, a couple of miles down the road. I was putting along at about 10 miles per hour, looking into the trees and watching the hillsides. I decided to stop for a bathroom break. I stopped where I could see some mountainsides and some valleys. I parked on the right side of the road. The sun was shining, the air was perfectly still, and it was a bit cool out. I was just standing in front of my bike, watching the mountains to the south, when I noticed to the left, out of the corner of my eye, what I first thought was an airplane. It was 400 or 500 yards away and about the size of a DC-3 plane or a full-size school bus. It was traveling north to south at about 40 yards above the ground and moving maybe 20 miles an hour. Right away, I thought, boy, is he low. I blinked my eyes because I couldn't make out any tail fin or the wings. It had what looked like portholes all along the side of it. It was cigar-shaped, with a gray strip down the middle and a dark green stripe on the top and bottom. I thought to myself, something's wrong with this picture. Then I realized there was no sound. If it was an airplane, the roar would have filled this valley easily. As I watched, it seemed to partially dematerialize and then return to solid form. It did this as it was moving, and it did it more than once. Then it dawned on me, uh-oh, I don't think I should be seeing this. It's a UFO, and probably doesn't want to be seen. I crouched down on the road, hiding behind some of the roadside grass. I then watched it go behind a cone-shaped hill and not come out. I stood up, looking for it, and feeling very excited and happy about what I saw, and thinking, they didn't even know they were being watched. I was standing beside my bike when I heard a loud metallic clunk behind me around the corner. Right away, I thought, somebody must be here, and I've got to tell them what I saw. The noise I heard sounded like a heavy trunk lid on a car slamming shut. I quickly walked along the edge of the road to the corner to see who was there. I came face to face, 60 feet, with two gray creatures in blue jumpsuits, about 5 foot tall, with big, insect-looking heads, pointy faces, big eyes, thin arms, and thin body and legs. I immediately thought, they're not little green men. They're grasshopper people. Before this, all I knew about aliens was that they were supposed to be little green men. At that same instant, the one on the left raised his left hand to his waist, which held some type of flashlight device, and I saw a bright flash of light come from it. Instantly, I felt paralyzed, and I was convinced time had stopped. Everything was black, no sound. I tried to yell, "No!" But all that came out was a distorted grunt. The next thing I knew, I was standing on the side of the road, scared, shaking, and confused. Within seconds, I remembered all of this had just taken place, and I thought, I'm getting out of here before they get me again. I turned around to get my bike, and for some reason it wasn't there. Then I noticed I was on the other side of the road. I said to myself, the hell is this? I didn't put it there. Still panicking, I rushed over, got on it, and realized the keys were gone. Now, I always left the keys in it. That way I could not lose them while sneaking around in the bush. I immediately started looking down the road and suddenly saw them in my hand. I started my bike and raced back to the trailer. I was feeling scared and amazed at the same time, and then noticed that all the shadows of the trees were pointing in a different direction than that of the morning sun. About 15 minutes later, I arrived at the trailer. Half an hour later, it was dark. I thought, no way. I only left here an hour ago. What's going on? I was really confused then. I said to myself, I'm not telling anybody about this. I'll just forget the whole thing. I put on a pot of coffee and could then hear a soft humming sound above the trailer. I could also feel a soft vibration in everything, the trailer, the air, etc. After about 10 minutes, it had all stopped. I had a very strong feeling that they were outside. I did not look out the windows. Later that night, I still couldn't sleep. And while having my coffee, I began to have flashbacks of the past events. I remember being in a dreamlike state, watching scenery flash by underneath as if I was flying. I watched mountains and rivers and forests go by at a very high rate of speed. I then became aware of other sounds and seemed to wake up. I opened my eyes and could see nothing but black, very deep and inky black. As I was looking at this, the blackness pulled back, revealing a face. I had been looking into the eyes of a gray-type creature. I could hear in my mind a voice saying there's nothing to worry about. I could hear him talking in my mind. There were three or four of these types walking around, but only one of them talked to me. The two I saw earlier on the road, I never saw them again. I then sat up and had an idea of what might be going on, and I asked, "Are you going to do experiments on me?" And the one said, "They've already been done." I felt really good then because, except for a strange sensation in my hands, everything felt kind of normal. I kept rubbing my hands together, but did not look at them, as there was a totally strange environment to look at instead. I experienced no discomfort. The being nearest to me asked if I would like to see my home planet, and I said sure. I then walked over to the window where there was a machine that looked like a big copy machine. He asked me, "Please don't touch it." I replied, "Don't worry, I'm not touching anything in here." He then said, "That bright white star over there, well, that's your home." Now, I didn't know anything about astronomy at the time, but I always thought the Earth was blue, so right away I thought, he's lying to me. He also explained to me about space and stars, etc., but I can't remember any of it now. I was also asked if I would like to go on a trip. I replied, not yet. I felt very honored to be asked, and I did not want to go, but felt that the time was not right. Then I was told I would have to forget all of this. I was disappointed at hearing this. The first part of the experience was so scary, but once I was with them, I found them to be friendly, helpful. Their looks didn't bother me. They actually seemed like old friends. They gave me a clear glass, 3/4 full, with a yellow liquid, and told me to drink it up. It would make me forget everything. I told them I didn't want to forget an experience like this. It should be remembered. I was told it was for my own good that I forget. So I took 3 little sips and put the glass down. Next thing I know, I'm on the road by my bike, scared to death and wanting to get out of there. The next day, I met up with the other 2 guys and never said anything to them. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Some of the stories, you know, of alien abduction are truly terrifying. And I guess that's, when I was a young boy, I mean, I've talked about it numerous times, but I'll bring it up again. That's really what kind of got me scared, was thinking that these things could come in your house at night and take you into their ship, do who knows what to you, and bring you back. Mm-hmm. There's no safety. You know, and of course, I had a neighbor. Now, we lived out in the country, but so this neighbor was, you know, I don't know, 20 acres away, but she had told me, she was an old woman, that she's seen a UFO in the pasture by our house. So that was just like throwing fuel on the fire. That is something I did not need to know as a 9-year-old, especially with my dad and my uncle showing me pictures of these grays and allowing me to see communion with Christopher Walken, you know, all this stuff when I was a kid. That was the thing that really terrified me. Like I said, if I don't want to see Bigfoot, I just don't go in the woods, even though I was in the woods all the time as a kid. But aliens was always something terrifying, that they could come in my bedroom, freeze everybody else in the house, and they could just come in and get me. And that's what I like about these stories. The people, that's what's so shocking about the alien abduction. It's all not negative. Some people that are abductees, they feel like they're contactees.
Yes.
And that they themselves are special.
Mm-hmm.
That they've had some kind of relationship with these other beings, and they don't treat it as negative. And then there's other cases where the people are horrified.
Yes.
They, you know, whatever was done to them, it terrified them, it changed their life, it cost them their marriage, cost them all kinds of, they couldn't work. It really broke them down. So, you know, I guess it's a unique experience for whoever's experiencing it, but nevertheless, very scary.
Yes.
I'd like to talk real quick about our sponsor, Gaia.com.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about them every week, and I, you know, every week I try to watch some more stuff on there because I got so much, and they're constantly adding new things every single day. Now, if you're not familiar or this is your first time listening to Expanded Perspectives, Gaia.com is a streaming service, a video streaming service, much like Netflix or Hulu. And you can go on there and they have tons of documentaries, tons of movies, things like that, that appeal to people that listen to this show. Stuff about the paranormal, things about government conspiracies, UFOs, lots of stuff like that. And I recently watched one this week called The Afterlife Investigations. And it was very interesting. It basically is asking whether or not the dead can speak to the living via these electronic devices, such as radios and tape recordings. Mm-hmm. And I think we even did an episode one time on the spirit box, or whatever that guy was building. And many scientists, according to this documentary, believe that they can. Now, Italy's most famous medium, a guy named Marcello Bacci, or Bacci, they all think so. Now, in front of cameras, grieving parents weep as they hear the voices of their dead children emerge from his radio. Now, how you would fake that, I don't know. Let's listen to this short clip.
After endless fake ghost TV shows, here at last is a documentary that presents the real evidence.
Manu, are you there?
I'm right here.
Yes. Hello, Matt.
The experiments featured in this program have been described by the scientists who witnessed them as some of the best evidence for life after death ever.
We had 1,000 hours of continuous communication with the spirit world.
Be quiet.
For 5 years, the Skoll experiment continued to produce a vast range of extraordinary phenomena. More than in any other experiment in the history of the paranormal. It was witnessed by hundreds of visitors and monitored by a team of internationally renowned scientists and investigators.
I must stress, it changes your paradigm.
What they claim to have seen and recorded is so shocking that many will find it unbelievable.
The table levitated and began to spin very rapidly.
I'm not at all convinced that there is such a thing as life after death.
In the US, we put psychic Alison Dubois, the inspiration behind the hit TV show Medium, to the test. Could she communicate with one of the leading Skoll researchers after his tragic death?
Is there a doctor in the house?
And we meet this woman.
I'll just never be this age again.
She says she can pick up the voice of her dead son on this simple tape recorder. We also follow the Skoll group to Italy, where they conducted seances with Marcello Bacci, one of the world's most unusual mediums. For decades, grieving parents say they can talk to their dead children via his radio. Although the experiments featured in this program provide scientific evidence for the possibility of life after death, most of the public know nothing about them. This is the first time both the Skoll Group and Bacci have allowed their work to be shown together in a TV documentary.
There has, in my view, never been anything like that at all, ever.
So there you go. Very interesting. They investigate a woman who says she can hear the recorded voices of her son 20 years after his death. And I don't know, man, the afterlife is a weird thing. Regardless of what your religion is, it doesn't even matter if you're religious at all.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's going to die, and everybody's going to have to deal with the afterlife at some point.
Sooner or later, you got to face that. Yeah, for sure.
So it does make me question, because obviously there are people out there that are faking and taking advantage of people who have a dead loved one and stuff. But some of the ones are very, very interesting. To me, I mean, especially back, remember when we interviewed Jim Tucker and those reincarnated lives? I mean, some of those stories are just fantastic. I don't have any idea how you could fake them, how a child could know the details about another person's life. So anything involving the afterlife is very interesting. And also, after watching this documentary, it gave me the idea that maybe I need to do an episode on this, these tests that these guys were doing and testing out in front of these electronic devices, figuring out how they were speaking to people on the other side.
Yeah, that might be something fun
to get into. What do you like? What's your favorite series on there?
I've got so many that I just bits and pieces. But what's funny is that I actually watched one before we even discussed what you were going to do this week's show over. There's several alien abduction ones, and I've been, without meaning to, just dropping in on them and watching them, because it creeps me out. But I like the one because, we met Nick Pope in Arkansas. He's a great guy. Yeah. We got to hang out with Nick. He's actually on there. He has one on the Open Minds with Regina Meredith, but he's got one that's called Encounter at Rendlesham Forest, where he talks about the whole thing. And it's a great one. There's one on there that I'm going to watch. I haven't watched it yet, and it's Kim Carlsberg talking about abduction on there with Regina. So I'm going to get on there and kind of pay attention. I don't know. I'm fascinated by this abduction stuff now. It's one of those deals because I don't know if it's a physical abduction or if it's a spiritual abduction, something mental. I don't know what it is. You follow me?
I don't know
if it's, are they taking your essence? What are they, what's going on? So this is kind of one of my new fascinated little areas that I like to delve into. I don't get too deep. I don't get out of the kiddie end of the pool because it freaks me out. So I stay in the knee deep water. I don't want to just jump head first in there. So I stay in the knee deep.
I've read in so many stories that if you start paying attention to it, that it's like almost sends off a signal and then they come and get you.
Yeah, me too. And I'm not down with that. I don't need that in my life, man. Come on.
Now, speaking of Nick Pope and the Ozark Mountain UFO Conference, we're going to be going again this April. Now, it's going to be the 30th annual UFO Conference there, and it's awesome. And if you'd always always wanted to come to go to one of these conferences and you'd like to meet me and Cam, as well as all the other speakers that will be there, it's going to be in April 14th through the 16th in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. I know for most of the time, people have a hard time saving money for these conferences because they can be quite expensive. But if you know now, see, you have plenty of time to save. Put a little bit aside every month. Before you know it, April will be here and you can go to the conference. Last year was a blast. All the authors not only take time to talk to each person, sign your book, take photographs. I mean, it's super laid back, super friendly. And we had a wonderful time there. And we're going to be there with our wives this time in April. I'm sure Micah Hanks will be around somewhere in town.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll have him around.
But anyways, Cam, do you have anything special planned for the week? We're counting down the days to Christmas, brother.
I know, nothing really crazy going on this week. Everything is, you know, it's funny the way the month works out. You got a few days left, then the new month starts. So it's going to be kind of, we're limboing it. We're going to be kind of stuck in limbo at work for the next couple of days till we get everything flowing again. And I'm okay with that. I'm totally okay with just coming back in from the vacay and then just sliding in real easy. Like, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, you got to get back on schedule. Well, if you've had your own alien abduction story you'd like to share with the show, you can send those stories to expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can also, I must remind you, you can call the show if you want to now, 817-945-3828. And if you would and you haven't yet, please take the time to write us a review on iTunes. It really helps out the show. I hope everybody has a good week out there. For you elite members, we'll be speaking to you again on Thursday. For everyone else, we'll speak to you next Monday. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.